to empower yourself, all of you assembled here, to empower yourself with the wisdom, with the knowledge that can help you navigate the journey of life. So as you know, our topic today is transform. Transform your worst enemy into your best friend. So many of you may already have surmised, what is our worst enemy? Yeah, the mind. Of course. Many of you have heard the Krishna conscious philosophy. And so to some extent we understand this. But the mind has tremendous effect on our life. An effect that is often not perceived. Especially in those who just get the educational syllabus that is taught in our educational systems. A simple story to illustrate. Once, a person while traveling through a forest took rest under a tree. So while he was taking rest under a tree, in that tree there were some holes, and one of the holes there was a rat that was staying. Another hole there was a snake. So just coming to this. So in one of the holes there was a rat, in another there was a snake. So the snake was non-poisonous. So when this person was sleeping, the snake felt that he's intruding in my territory. And the snake came out and bit him. And of course the man was bigger than the snake in size, so the snake immediately fled inside. At that moment the rat came out. And when the rat saw the man, and the man saw the rat, the man was angry, he had already been bitten. So he picked up a stone and hurled it at the rat. And the rat just ran inside the hole in the nick of time. And the stone hit the external of the tree. Now the rat was very angry. He realized what had happened. The snake had come and bitten the man, and the man was angry with the rat. So after some time, this rat just peeped out and he saw that the man was asleep. So he went out and quickly bit the man. And he ran back inside. And at that time, the snake had thought maybe this man has passed away. The snake came out. And what happened? This man woke up, he turned around. It felt the biting sensation in his thigh. He turned around and saw the snake. And when he saw the snake, he got so frightened, he got a heart attack and he died. Now the question is, who killed the man? Was it the rat or was it the snake? Who was it? How many of you say rat? The rat doesn't have any capacity to kill a man. The rat's bite may cause just a little bit wound. And the snake? Again, a snake is not poisonous. If the snake cannot, snake bite cannot kill the man. So if neither the rat nor the snake can kill the man, but the man has been killed. So who killed him? That is the mind. Yes. Can all of you please move a little bit ahead? Because we have many more student devotees coming in. And many more will come afterwards also. Already some are standing. Thank you. So, this is the power of the mind. That because of a false perception, we may even end up losing our lives. That's why this knowledge is very crucial. Now, in our modern advanced society, we are dazzled by and proud of the enormous technological advancement that has been done. So we have fast cars, aeroplanes, rockets, mobiles, cell phones, internet. However, despite this, although at first look our modern society looks very impressive, but if you have a second look, we see this. America, the first number one expenditure in America as per the budgetary allocation is war. defense. And number two is prisons. Number of prisons in America is astronomical and it keeps increasing. And prison is a very big industry. Now what does it indicate? The number of prisoners is more and the number of prisons is more. It indicates that the number of people breaking the laws is more. There's something wrong. We see the graph is increasing. Now, what about the gun sales? We see it's a phenomenal increase from over just 4 years. Now, of course. So many of you are aware of the Virginia Tech massacre, the unfortunate shooting of students and a professor. One girl and one professor was also from India in that. So after that, there was a great debate in the American intelligentsia. Why are students going crazy like this? That was a major incident, but there were some smaller incidents before that also. So they had a lot of brainstorming. And finally, do you know what was the conclusion that they came to? They said, more students and teachers should carry guns to their colleges. Why? In case some student goes mad, they will be able to shoot him before he shoots so many people. Now, is that really a solution? So, of course, in America, the idea is that they are a freedom-loving country. And so they consider the possession of guns as a fundamental human right in their country. And they say that the way the Nazi Germans persecuted and humiliated and terminated the Jews, that way no one would have ever been able to terminate Americans because we have our guns. So they consider it a sign of dignity to have their guns. But America has the maximum domestic violence in the whole world. In fact, the number of deaths due to internal violence in America are 10 times more than per capita all the other countries. So it's unfortunate that the gun sales are increasing and further gun sales are being promoted. But if people are having guns, that indicates that? What does it indicate? Sorry? Great insecurity. There is a threat to life. That's why people carry guns. So that means, despite the razzle-dazzle culture, people are insecure. So then we see the murders. They're increasing tremendously. And violence against women. Just one country is so much. In the West, it is very difficult to try to, for the women to protect themselves. Of course, nowadays women are trying to learn some karate and some other defense techniques. But still, the point is that there is so much lust. There is so much uncontrolled passion. Because of which there is so much violence against women. And this is divorces. So in USA, how much is it? And this was almost 10 years ago. Now it will probably be much more. Canada, Denmark. So here, what does this again illustrate? Now, traditionally, in the East as well as in the West, there were joint families. And the joint families, many family members, relatives would live together. And the joint families broke. And then we had nuclear families. And now even the nucleus is split. And we have electrons and protons orbiting around. Electrons, protons and neutrons orbiting around in space. It's very unfortunate. Okay. Okay, maybe some of you can come here also. And the number of students are coming more and more.
They are outside.
Many are standing outside also. Can all of you please move ahead?
Some of you can come this way.
Yeah, I can move.
Please come.
Also, you can come. This place is very clean. Standing outside and waiting. So, all we can for today's.
nerves. Yes. If again you are not able to get place, please signal to me and then we'll have to move forward again. So may the baby better you move forward now only a little bit more, please. Yeah, that's good enough. Thank you. So one of my friends from America was telling me a click over there, a joke which they have. They say there is not only life insecurity, there is no job insecurity. They say when you go to office, there is no guarantee you will have your job. And when you come back home, there is no guarantee you will have your wife. So it's unfortunate, but it's a reality. Now, some of you may be planning to go abroad. So just some caution. If you meet somebody, some person abroad, it's considered indecent to ask that person, who are your parents? Why? Because many people have two mothers and three fathers. So, what about mental health? This is just an expression, but we see stress is the greatest health menace according to the World Health Organization of this current century. Hypertension, depression, addictions. Now, many of you are aware that a fisherman catches a fish by putting a bait. Similarly, if there are mice in the house, we catch a mice by putting some cheese in a cage. Now, both the fish as well as the mice have excuses. Their bait looks like food. And they don't know in advance it's a trap. But we humans, supposedly the most intelligent of all the animals, have neither of the excuses. Now, a cigarette doesn't look like food to any human being. Isn't it? And who doesn't know that cigarette smoking is injurious to health? So this is the extent to the which mind, our mind can force us into self-destructive behavior where we harm ourselves more than what even the animals who do it ignorantly, but we do it despite knowledge.
Excuse me. I know you didn't think anyone would catch you, but you just slammed your door into my car. The least you can do is say you're sorry, lady. I'm sorry. See? Like that. Thank you.
So, this is how we say the uncontrolled mind. Small trifle. Now one person hits against the car of another with just the door. That can blow so much out of proportion that people can be bent on taking each other's lives. And if we see most conflicts, whether they may be domestic or they may be international, they often start with small misunderstandings which could have been dealt with amicably, but which were not dealt with amicably. That's why the control of the mind is very important. And the control of mind is not there, not only will we suffer, we'll make others suffer. Statistic, please, loudly. Yes, you can raise your hand. Who would like to read this? Yes, please. What is your good name? You can read. Would someone like to read this? So nothing has come to me. Okay. Yeah, you can read.
Over 1 million people commit suicide every year, 1% every 40 seconds. This figure is more than the total deaths in war and homicides combined.
I think you have to move ahead, please, further. Can you come here, a little bit here? Viraya Prabhu, we can move this as well as this out. You can just get a small chair. It'll be a little disturbance, but at least... How many devotees are there outside? Okay. Maybe can we do one thing? Can you please place this over there somewhere in a corner? And so that you can also come ahead. A little bit more, please. Is it enough? Please come ahead. Is it visible to everyone? The slide projector? So, sorry? Hare Krishna. Sorry for the interruption, but we have to make some logistic adjustments. Maybe the projector, maybe two of you can come here, and the projector can go a little behind. And the image will become bigger. That mridang can go over there. And this asana, it can move over there. Is everybody seated comfortably now? Or still some devotees are outside? Please move ahead a little bit. Maybe some of you can come here also, if you don't mind. You can come here. Yeah. Is that okay? You can come here. Yeah. Two more devotees can come here. Is it enough now? Is anybody still outside? Okay, those who are in between, little bit, you can move ahead. Yeah. So, now, all over the world, when there was a WTC disaster, there's a great concern and outrage. How can the lives of so many innocent people be slaughtered like this? But statistics show that more than the number of murders and war crimes involving death, more than the number of people being killed by other people are the people who are killing themselves. Suicide, the World Health Organization calls suicide a tragic social health problem for which there is no known solution. Still, some devotees are outside? Okay. Then you can just manage the over there. If anybody else comes, you can let me know then. Can you just press click? Yeah. Yes. Go ahead. So all these, keep pressing. So we see that despite our progress, violence, unemployment, murder, suicide, corruption, mental stress, we discussed this is more or less overview of our slide. Is there? And no, worse than that is terrorism. Earlier there would be wars, which would fall on the war fields. But now terrorism means the wars come to the cities. And innocent people who are not at all to be blamed are killed. Go ahead. Yes. Now this is a very revealing statistic. Would someone like to read this? Yes, please. Yeah. Yourself. Can we imagine? We are progressing, certainly, but then we are progressing in killing each other faster. Isn't it? It's very unfortunate. One reason for this is, of course, that the weapons of mass destruction have been developed. But still, the point is that so many lives are being taken. So that means, overall, we are becoming a more violent race. Isn't it? Now, in the earlier centuries, there could have been people who were killed by, say, snake bites and lions and tigers. In the 20th century, that will be very less. So who is causing all these deaths? It's human beings only. We are killing each other. So certainly, the uncontrolled mind is a very serious menace, individually and globally. Yes? Yes? And of course, ecologically. Yes? Yes, you can read, please. Who had raised the hand just now? Who didn't read? Yeah? Yes, yourself. Yeah, who is saying this? WHO, yes. 10 years. Just cut short. In that, all of you know there is active smoking and there is passive smoking. That means somebody else is smoking and we inhale the smoke. That also affects us. So like that, there is passive pollution effect also. Just by living in the cities. Go ahead. Yes, who else would like to read? Who has not read till now? Yes, please. Yes, who is saying this? Yeah. Now, doomsday prophecy is a religious statement. We said there are many religions which say that it's going to be a doomsday when everything will be destroyed. At that time, how it will be destroyed? There will be environmental super disasters. But now they are saying no religion has to prophesize that. Our climate itself is prophesying that. They are an imminent reality. They are about to happen. Now, most of you know about global warming. So, if the ocean level rises, then we had one tsunami which caused such a big devastation. But there will be tsunami-like waves on all the coasts all over the world. You know, Bombay may then become just a bay. There will be nothing left. And that is not such a far-fetched possibility. Yes? So, yes, we are progressing, but is it in the right direction? Next. Yes. Why is there so much confusion? Yes? Yes. Yes. Who would like to read this? Yes. Yes, please.
The means by which we live have outdistanced the end for which we live. Our scientific power has outrun our spiritual power. We have guided missiles and misguided men.
Who is saying this? Yeah. Martin Luther King was a very dynamic and intelligent social activist in America. So very poignant statement he's making. We have guided missiles and misguided men. That means we have the technology by which we are able to control and manipulate the world outside of us. That's how we are able to guide missiles. But we pathetically lack the technology to control the world within ourselves. To guide ourselves and then guide others. So a misguided man. And the WTC disaster was a typical example of this. A guided missile, that airplane, at the helm of which were misguided men. Yes, next please. Yes. Somebody ahead can read this. It's Omar Bradley. Yes, please.
Ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants. We know more about war than we know about peace. More about killing than we know about living. We have grasped the mystery of the atom and rejected the summon of the mouth.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Nuclear giants and ethical infants. Nuclear giant means we have such powerful nuclear technology that we can destroy the whole world a million times over. And still we will have weapons left to do more destruction. That's the kind of weapons we have now. But we are ethical infants. Ethical infants mean we don't know how to deal with issues. We don't understand what is right, what is wrong, what is beneficial, what is harmful. We saw that lady, two ladies, just blowing a trifle totally out of proportion. So we know so much about killing, but very little about living. We know so much about war, but so little about peace. But this is due to a misdirected or an imbalanced education. Our education teaches us a lot about the external world. Most of you will be becoming engineers or some other professional. So you learn to control the external world through technology. But what about the inner world? Without that, we will remain ethical and emotional infants. Yes? Yes, go ahead. This is the UNESCO Charter. What does it say? Who would like to read, please? Yes?
Just as war originates in the minds of people, so too must peace originate in their minds.
Yes. So they also recognized that we cannot just get peace by having some peace treaties or some peace pacts. Peace has to originate in the minds of people. So before the world can become a peaceful place, people have to become peaceful, because people is what make the world. So, and people can become peaceful when their minds are peaceful. Yes? Yes. Therefore, what is the greatest need of our times? It is not hunger. It is not technology. It is not economic development. It is the controlled mind. Yes? William Blake. Who would like to read? Yes, who has, somebody who has not read till now? Yes, please. Yeah.
Mind is such a thing that it makes hell out of heaven and heaven out of hell.
Yes. Hell out of heaven and heaven out of hell. That means depending on how we perceive a situation, we may perceive it as wonderful or we may perceive it as dreadful. So now we'll discuss historical as well as contemporary examples of this particular phenomena. William Blake stated it, penned it very beautifully. Our Vedic literature gives examples of this. Describes the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was such a powerful ruler, not just of one small office in Pune camp. People are proud, I am the boss of this office. You are not just the boss of an office, or even the boss of a building, or a city, or a country, or a continent, or a planet. He was the lord of the universe at his time. And everybody was bowing down to him and obeying his commands. Everything was just going according to his plan. But there's one person who would not bow down to him. Who was that? Yes, his son Prahlad. And just that one thing not going according to his plan made life worse than hell for Hiranyakashipu. His life was heavenly, more than heavenly. Even the king of heaven, Indra, did not have as much control as he had. All the enjoyments of life were available to him. But just because one thing didn't go according to his plan. One person didn't behave the way he wanted that person to. He felt himself hellishly miserable. Well, that is the nature of the mind. It can make hell out of heaven. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam tells the story of one Avanti Brahmana. He was a very wealthy merchant, was also very miserly. In fact, what to speak of giving charity to others, he would be stingy in giving money to his own family members for their necessary expenditures. Somehow he would hold on to money. You know, there are people who tie wet clothes around their stomach. Why do you know? So that will decrease their digestive fire. So that they will eat less. So that they will save more money. That can be the extent of miserliness. So this Avanti Brahmana was a great miser. And he accumulated vast amounts of wealth. But somehow, by the inconceivable will of providence, he lost everything. The fire in his farm, the merchants who were selling his products, they swindled him. Whatever little money remained, his relatives and family was plundered and ditched him. And he himself got a terrible disease. And because he had behaved in a miserly way by which everybody had developed animosity for him. So he was now the butt of jokes and ridicule from all the people. Now he didn't have monetary power to protect him. He was on the streets. And people would taunt him. Children would throw stones at him. They would humiliate him. In fact, it is described that when he would somehow beg and get some food, so some young hoodlums would come and catch him and take the food and right in front of him in his food, they would urinate. And they would leave the food and go away. And none of us can imagine this kind of humiliation. At that time, he realized he was in such great misery and there was just, practically speaking, no hope of relief from that misery. And because he had been born and brought up in a cultured family, he knew the only person I can take shelter of is God. And that time he turned away from the external world, inwards towards God, and took shelter of God. And in that shelter, he found so much security, so much satisfaction, so much peace, that the external world did not matter to him at all. And that time he sang a very historical and eloquent song, which is filled with tremendous philosophical depth and truth. One of the songs he sings is, Nayam jano me sukha dukkha hetu na devatatma graha karma kala. He says, nobody else is the cause of my suffering. And who is the only cause? Manaha param karanam ma mananti samsara chakra parivarta yad yad. Manaha param karanam is only the mind. So now his sufferings were real. But by a right perception of the mind, he was able to overcome the suffering. And he just left the village, went to the jungle, absorbed himself into devotional trance, became fully purified, and attained the ultimate success of life. So what was a disastrous failure turned into a glorious triumph just because his mind was controlled by the shelter of God. Similarly, in our modern times, many of you may still remember the World Cup final. There was the Italian captain, French captain, Zidane. It was Zidane. So, French. So, he was in the final match of his career. And he had an illustrious career throughout his life. And his team was just marching to victory. Just a few minutes left. And what happened? Seemingly abused him, whatever. And he wildly headbutted into him. And he was shown the red card and sent off. So Benjamin Franklin said, what is begun in anger ends in shame. And that's what happened. He became a disgrace for himself and for his nation. It was a distasteful event for all his fans and all the people watching the event. His mind literally made hell out of heaven for him. Isn't it? It was a heavenly situation. He was going to be on the top of the world. The captain of the top team in the world. And just one slip of the mind. And he ruined himself, practically speaking. On the other hand, even in the Western tradition, there is a story of Socrates, who, as you know, was a philosopher. Now, of course, he had, as the ways of life are, he had a very irritable wife. And he philosophically made a statement. He says, if you get a good wife, you are fortunate. If you don't, you become a philosopher. So the second option had befallen him. So, of course, he was a very intelligent person. And once when he was on his talking philosophy with his friends, his wife became very irritated with him. She started shouting at him. Now imagine if we are talking and somebody starts shouting. It will actually disturb us. So Socrates was used to the ranting of his wife. But his friends were not. So he saw that they were disturbed. He said, let us go out. And as they were going out, suddenly they saw that Socrates had become drenched wet. And they looked up and they saw the jeering face of his wife. They looked up at the wife and they looked at Socrates. Socrates looked up at his wife and looked at them. And he smiled and he said, first it was thundering, now it is pouring. So he just took it coolly. So it was a miserable situation, but he laughed it off. So he could make heaven out of hell. He just made a raised a joke and went on with life. So that is the power of the mind. Go ahead, please. Now, many of us know of relativity and biotechnology or computer engineering or telecommunications as significant technological strides, scientific strides of the last century. But more than that is the discovery of the mind. Now, earlier, since the 17th, 18th centuries, the mind was an object of study. In fact, the field of psychology was called as, very logos means study, psyche means mind, the study of the mind. But as scientists started understanding or probing into the human body more and more, they couldn't find the mind anywhere. So then they decided, how can we have a scientific field which is based on something that is not scientifically perceivable? So therefore, they changed the definition of psychology to study of behavior. Behavior is something which is observable. And there was a group of scientists who said that there is no such thing as a mind. Even currently, there are six different theories about the mind. Some say that the mind is just matter. Some say the mind is spirit. Some say the mind is a combination of matter and spirit. Some say that the mind is neither. It is some third element which we don't know about. Some say that the mind is just non-existent. It's imaginary. But whatever it is, all of these theories widely vary with respect to their propositions of what the mind is. But they have all have one thing in common about their prescription. None of them are able to help people to control their minds. Unfortunately. But although science has not yet been able to see the mind with its microscopes, but science has been able to see empirically the effects of the mind. So let us see the negative and the positive effects of the mind. Yes? The psychosomatic illness. Psycho is behind, please. Psycho means mind. Soma means body. So that means illnesses which originate from the mind and manifest in the body. That means a person will go to a doctor and say, I'm feeling terrible pain in the chest. The doctor does an x-ray, does a Doppler, he does a CT scan. He doesn't find anything wrong with his body. There's nothing wrong with it, but I feel terrible pain. It's because in the mind there's a problem. And eventually a disease will manifest in the body also. So psychosomatic diseases cannot be treated just by bodily medicines. The mental anxiety has to be dealt with. So these are diseases which originate from the mind. This has been something which is observed. Next. Yes. Phobia. Phobia means fear. So now, There are different people who have fears of different things. For example, some people, if they just hear a brick being dragged against the ground, they start trembling. Fearful. Now, what is there to be afraid of, actually? But they feel afraid. Whereas some people have claustrophobia, fear of crowds. Some people have hydrophobia, fear of water. So now, physically, there is no threat to them. But still, inside their body, all the mechanisms are activated, which would have been activated when there was a real threat. That means some real effect is taking place in the body. Now, how is that effect taking place? Because the mind is feeling threatened. That means this, the mind is affecting the body. These are two examples of psychosomatic illness and phobias are examples of negative effects on the mind and the body. Next, let's see the positive effects. So this is placebo effect. Any of you have heard about this before? Yeah, some of you. So there are some people who pretend to be sick just to get the sympathy and affection and attention of other people. So they are called hypochondriacs. So now these hypochondriacs, they pretend to be sick although they are not sick. And sometimes they think I am sick. They believe they are sick although if you measure the temperature, there is nothing wrong with them. So then the doctors who treat these sort of hypochondriacs, they started giving them sugar pills which look like medicines. And then they also, oh, now I have got a medicine, now I must get well. And they would get well also. But then, just for an experiment, the doctors tried giving these placebo pills, that means these are sugar pills, to people who were actually sick. And they found even they got well. Then what was happening? And the people were thinking, now I have got a medicine, now I must get well. And that feeling that I must get well, and I will soon get well, that would activate their inner immune system, their vital system, and they would get cured. Of course, this cannot apply for very major illnesses, but it has been observed. So that means here the mind can heal the body even in the absence of any physical healing input. That is the placebo effect, yes? Yes? Then this is another upcoming branch. No, go behind, please. Another upcoming branch called as psychoneuroimmunology. Immunology means how to improve the immune system of a person so that he doesn't fall prey to diseases. So neuro means brain. There are neural cells in the brain, neurons. Psycho means mind. So psychoneuroimmunology means, in simple words, that when we feel threatened, when we feel disturbed, then there are certain enzymes which are secreted in the body like adrenaline, which evoke a fight or flight response. And although they increase alertness temporarily, eventually they cause exhaustion. And they are debilitating for the body if they are continuously present in the body. On the other hand, if a person feels relaxed, loud, safe, happy, peaceful, then that secretes endorphins. And these endorphins promote good health. In fact, doctors say, you know, having endorphins secreted in your body is like taking a bath in good health hormones. You're bathing yourself with healthy hormones. So, psychoneuroimmunology, it deals with trying to help people develop positive emotions by which the health promoting enzymes and hormones will be secreted in their body and they will become healthy. And it helps tremendously. So that's why if a person is happy, he will be healthy. Yes, go ahead please. So now, that means science has understood what is the mind. Not exactly what is the mind, but that the mind exists. The mind has tangible empirical effects. Now, what exactly is the mind? The Vedic scriptures give us the answer, but they give us a hard answer that the mind fits at an intermediate level in a three-dimensional hierarchy. So let us go back to the first dimension, and then we'll come back to the second and the third. So, yes. The most fundamental question is, who am I? So generally we would introduce ourselves by our name, isn't it? But let's ask ourselves. Most of us, not most of us, all of us, came into existence before our name came into existence. Isn't it? We were born, after that, we are given a name by society. And we can change our names if we want. What to speak of names, nowadays people even change their genders. In the West, it is quite common. These clinics are called gender benders. So people can change their names, people can change their nationalities, people can change their genders, people can change their looks. So all these are external, then we can change them. Yes, but who is it that I who remains the same? Go ahead, please. Yeah, so some people feel, most of the time when we talk about the mind, you should just tell us, okay, think like this, do like this, do some auto-suggestions and you'll be happy. But this is actually superficial. It's like, yes, go ahead. Yes. What is the power of knowledge? I mean, if a patient is sick, he's in pain, and the doctor gives him a painkiller, the pain goes away. The patient is happy, the doctor is happy. End of story. Is it? No, it is the end of the life of the patient.
That is so, doesn't it?
Yeah, the painkiller may be quick and cheap, but it doesn't kill the pain, it kills the patient gradually. It kills the patient's awareness of the pain and the disease. That's why quick fix solutions like painkillers do not work in the long run. So sometimes people say that if your mind is being disturbed, just relax, be peaceful and everything will be alright. Yes, how long? We may become peaceful, but the world around us will not let us stay peaceful. So we have to change our worldview. And that's why just a painkiller is not enough. We need the proper antibiotic, the proper medicine. And that medicine is the knowledge of how to live in this world. Go ahead, please. So, most of you are aware of this. All these are externals. Who am I? You know, now if this is my hand, but it's not I hand. Like the hand were cut off, it was held in front of me. Now somebody asks, where are you? Are you there or are you here? Yes, I'm here. I'm not here, I'm here. Like that actually, you know, there's heart transplant. So the doctor can take out your heart. Here is your heart. Now, am I there or am I here? I'm still here. Like that we can do for all the parts of the body. So all the parts can be taken out and shown in front of us. But then who am I? So I'm different from all the parts of the body. I'm a spiritual being, the soul. Go ahead, please. Yes. So this is Dr. Monson who says that all the parts of the body are just 110 rupees worth. Go ahead, please. Now, are we 110 rupees worth? No, certainly not. At least your parents won't think like that. Is this all this potassium, calcium, are all these the essential stuff of your identity? Now, if the doctor comes and tells your mother that your baby's body is 70% water. Oh, my baby is watery. Will any mother say like that? Or if the chemistry teacher tells your father, no, the human body is carbon-based. Oh, my son is carbonious. Oh, yes, these maybe are the physical components of our body, but we are completely different. Go ahead. Yes. Somebody certainly much superior. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead. So Bhagavad Gita explains. Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tha dehantara prapti dhiras tatranamuhyati. So all of you can see that spark of life going through the different bodies. So the body keeps changing, but that spark of life, the source of life, that remains unchanging. That is the soul. Go ahead. Yes. So we are like the driver in the car of the body. Go ahead, please. Yes. So now this brings us back to the mind now. So the body that we see right now around us is the gross body. This is made of earth, water, fire, air and ether. Then we have a subtle body, a sukshma sharir, which is made up of mind, intelligence and false ego. And then we have a spirit, a soul, which is sat, chitananda. Go ahead, please. So, go ahead, please. Same point, gross, subtle and another computer analogy. So the hardware is the gross body, something which we can see. Software is the subtle body. And, yes, the operator is the soul. So now, let us see how mind control is very important. Go ahead. So now how do we function? We take in information from the eyes, just like a computer has I/O devices. So we take in information from our senses, and then the mind and intelligence, they act as per the information, and then we act accordingly. So first information goes inside through the Jnanendriyas, and then action is executed through the Karmendriyas. Go ahead, please. So most of you know the chariot of the body. How many of you know about this? Okay. And how many of you are coming first time for this youth meeting? Oh, good number. Okay. So this is a famous analogy given in several of the Upanishads, Shvetashvara Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, as well as other Upanishads. So this said that the body is like a chariot. And in this body, the horses are like the senses. Just like somebody might be wanting to go to some library for studying. And on the way is, I see the poster of a movie. And instead of going this way, he goes this way. Goes to the movie. So that's like one horse, the eyes, dragging the person in one direction. Like that, all the horses are dragging us in different direction. But the horses are controlled by the charioteer using the reins. So the charioteer is the intelligence. The mind is the rope, the reins. And the passenger is the soul. So, for the chariot to go in the right direction, the intelligence has to be strong enough. The charioteer has to be strong enough to control the horses. Similarly, our intelligence has to be strong enough to control the senses. Go ahead. Yes. So, if the mind is controlled, it is our best friend, else it is the greatest enemy. Yes. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Go ahead. Yes, who would like to read this quickly? Yes. Yes, please. Thank you. Yes. So now this is how to control the mind. It's a 4-point formula which we'll discuss. So let's go ahead. So what does meditation do? It leads to 3 things. Clarity, calmness, and coolness. That means clarity means if spectacles is filled with dust, you cannot see properly. So it clarifies our vision. It makes us calm by which you can understand the situation properly. And it makes us internally peaceful and cool. Like when people are disturbed, you say, be cool, isn't it? And it's not that the temperature of their body has increased at that time. But it's a figurative expression. So calmness, cool, all these 3 come. Go ahead. Yes, go behind, please. So what is meditation actually? Yes. Yeah. Meditation just does not mean sitting in some cross-legged posture. Meditation means, can somebody read this? Yes.
It's the mind on the unchanging instead of changing. That is the real meditation.
Yes. The Bhagavad Gita gives the example. Yatha dipo nivatas to neingate sopamasputa. It says, just as a lamp in a windless place will not waver. Similarly, the mind of a person who has controlled his mind will not waver. It will stay fixed. So, how will it stay fixed? If we are just constantly thinking of the things around us, they are always changing. So, we have to have some unchanging object for thought. Then, we can be fixed. Just like, if somebody is in an ocean, and the ocean, the waves are always coming and going. Up and down. And if somebody is in the ocean itself, he will be shaken and thrown up and down. But now if he is in a boat or a ship, then the waves will shake the ship also, but they will not shake the ship so much as a person who is just in the ocean. So because he has got something which is less changing. Now if the ship is held on to by an anchor, the ship will shake very little. And a person on it will shake even little, more or less. So like that, if the more we are connected to the unchanging, the less we will be disturbed by the changing. You know, people think that the changes in my world should stop, then I will become peaceful. But that is never going to happen. The only thing constant in this world is change. Change is the constant thing in this world. Therefore, there is a saying that the more things change, the more we need to embrace the things that don't change. So that we will have the strength to deal with that which is changing. And now let us find out what is it that is unchanging. Actually, everything is changing. The economy is changing, our jobs are changing. As we discussed, people change their spouses, people change their houses, people change their sexes. What is left to be changed now? So actually what is unchanging is our spiritual identity. As souls, we are eternal and unchanging. God is eternal and unchanging. And our relationship is unchanging. So real meditation means fixing the mind on God. And that is an unchanging state of happiness. So let us now see how that can be done.
The Vedas, however, are not as well known for presenting historical and scientific knowledge as they are for expounding subtle sciences, such as the power of mantras. We all recognize the power of sound itself by its effects, which can be quite dramatic. Here, a high-pitched frequency shatters a drinking glass. So, we can easily understand that loud sounds can produce substantial reactions. It is commonly believed that mantras can carry hidden power, which can in turn produce profound effects. The ancient Vedic literatures are full of descriptions of weapons being called by mantra. For example, many weapons were invoked by mantra during the epic Kurukshetra War, wherein the Bhagavad Gita itself was spoken. The ancient deployment of Brahmastra weapons, equivalent to modern-day nuclear weapons, are described throughout the Vedic literatures. Additionally, mantras carry hidden spiritual power, which can produce significant benefits when chanted properly. Indeed, the Vedas themselves are sound vibrations in literary form and carry a profound message. Spiritual disciplines recommend meditational practices such as silent meditation, silent recitation of mantras, and also the verbal repetition of specific mantras out loud. A clinical test of the benefits of mantra chanting was performed on three groups of 62 subjects, males and females of average age 25. They chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra 25 minutes each day under strict clinical supervision. Results showed that regular chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra reduces stress and depression and helps reduce bad habits and addictions. These results formed a PhD thesis at Florida State University.
Let it take its time. So, here we see how just as science is discovering the power of the mind, is also discovering the power of mantra, that sound which delivers us from the mind. So, the best meditation is mantra meditation, because it directly, positively, actively connects us with the eternal, the unchanging. So, that is with respect to M, the meditation. And the next is I, that is intelligence. Now generally, people think of intelligence in terms of IQ. IQ is intelligence quotient. So this happened right in the time of the Greek philosophers, who considered the ability to memorize as very important. But subsequently, social observers found that it is not always that the students who had very high IQs became the most successful in their lives. Then they found that people in schools, their success, schools and universities, their success depends on how much they can memorize, analyze, segregate, group, information processing ability. But actually, in professional life, in career, success depends very greatly on the ability to form relationships, to understand one's own emotions and to understand others' emotions. So then they came up with another account called EQ, the emotional quotient. And they said, this is what will help people to succeed. But then they found after some time that despite the people who had high emotional quotient, still they would also not be able to have a direction in their lives. That means they could understand other people's emotions and mold themselves accordingly, but they didn't know what is it that I want in my life. Which direction should I go in my life? So often, despite their emotional sensitivity, they would not be able to utilize their talents fully. So then they found that there is one more figure. That is the ultimate intelligence quotient. That is called SQ. That is the spiritual quotient. So now, what is the spiritual quotient? So in one sense, now science has begun to understand the human being in his full three-dimensional glory. So IQ basically takes the brain ability. EQ deals with the mind. But SQ deals with the soul. And we need all three properly. Go ahead, please. So this is a book by Dana Zohar and Dr. Ian Marshall. A very famous book, SQ, Our Spiritual Intelligence, The Ultimate Intelligence. It's a bestseller in the West. So now computers have IQ. They have information processing ability. Sometimes better than humans. They don't make so much calculation mistakes. They do fast processing. Yes? Would somebody like to read this?
Computer know what the rules and art can follow them without making mistakes.
Yes. They can act accordingly. Do this program, do it. Tuck, tuck, they will do it. Yes? EQ? Someone else? Yes, please.
Animals have a sense of situation they are in and know how to respond appropriately.
Yes, that's why dogs are so much loud in the West. Isn't it? When the husband comes back from his office, you know, maybe the son is just playing a video game, the wife is watching her TV, or maybe she has gone for shopping, or she is busy doing her makeup. Nobody seems very happy that the father has come back home, except for one person. The dog wags his tail, shows his 32 or whatever teeth he has, and he shows his tongue, and he just leaps out to the person as soon as he's on his sofa, and he licks him. And this person feels, the success of my hard work is to be kissed by my dog. So, San Francisco, just go behind, please. San Francisco is the world's dog capital. There are more dogs in San Francisco than there are children. Because people prefer. The dogs always love us, our children always give so much trouble. So dogs have EQ, and unfortunately, humans are lacking EQ. So they are not able to get along with relationship. That's why humans prefer to have relationship with animals rather than with other humans. So this is EQ. Yes, but SQ allows us to be creative, to play with boundary, to play an infinite game. That means it gives us a direction to life. Go ahead. Only human beings can have SQ. Now, it's not that everybody has. The potential is there. Yes. Yes, quickly. Somebody can read. Yes, please. Behind. Loudly. Yes. Go ahead.
They work within boundaries, playing a finite game.
Yeah. Yes, continue.
SQ allows human to be creative, to seek answers to fundamental questions, and play an infinite game. It allows one to choose the situation itself.
Yes. What is it that I want to do in life? What is life meant for? What is the way to ultimately become happy? That can be understood only by human beings because they have SQ. And in our Vedic literature, this is called as Brahma Jikyasa. Spiritual inquiry, the inquiry about the purpose of life, the way to lasting happiness. And interestingly, scientists have found out, a scientist did a survey, and this was published by the Oxford University Press, in a massive book called The Handbook of Science and Religion. Sorry, Handbook of Religion and Health. In this book, they found that whatever race a person belongs to, whatever economic bracket, whatever age group, those people who had high SQ, that means those people who had a higher faith in God, they lived in harmony with God, they said that those people had much better physical and mental health than their atheistic counterparts. So there's another book by Patrick Lynn, God, the Evidence. There also documents evidence. Survey after survey after survey. So this Handbook of Science and Religion, it is not just one study, it is a compilation of different studies done all over the world for different bodily parameters. They're all combined and that's described. There is no better medicine for good health than strong faith in God. That was the conclusion of their study. So this high SQ not only benefits us spiritually, it benefits us materially also, physically and mentally. Go ahead. So go behind, please. What does it indicate? That means somebody is very busy climbing up the ladder of success. But the ladder is resting on the wrong wall. Then what is the use of the busyness of the expertise in climbing? For that, only the human being has the intelligence to understand that. So that is SQ. And N is neutrality. Neutrality means we should learn to become neutral observers of the mind. That means we should treat the mind as a separate person. We are not our minds. Our mind's emotions are not our emotions. When I think I am feeling bored, it's not that I am feeling bored, the mind is feeling bored. So here this person is making a proposal. And now this person is hearing. Is it right or is it wrong? So same way, whenever any thought comes in our mind, we shouldn't think this is my thought, this is my idea, this is my desire. We should observe. Does this make sense? Is it intelligent? No. So if it is not, then reject it. So become neutral observers. Go ahead. Yes. Who would like to read this quickly?
Our attitude in the life depends not so much on our aptitude as our new attitude.
Yes. Altitude depends on attitude. So generally, you know, we get frustrated when things go out of control, go wrong. But then no matter how many things go wrong, they are out of our control, but our thoughts and our responses, our thoughts, feelings and behavior are always in our control. That's what it means to make hell out of heaven and heaven out of hell. So we always have the control on these three things. Our thoughts, our feelings and our response, our behavior. Yes? Go ahead. Yes. So we discussed this. Go ahead. So now there are four different types of thoughts. There are positive, negative, routine, necessary and waste. Routine or necessary is the same thing. So now, positive thoughts will promote health, will promote energy. Negative thoughts will diminish energy, sap energy. Necessary thoughts are just necessary. And waste are a waste of time. Now, past and future, if our mind takes us to the past and just went, oh, this went wrong, that went wrong, if only that had gone like, that's a waste of time. But if we, with a controlled mind, go to the past and review the past so that we can learn from it, that is not a waste of time. But just lamenting is a waste of time. Similarly, daydreaming over the future is a waste of time. But using the mind, controlling it and observing the future so that we can plan and prepare. That is not a waste. So, which of these are desirable? Positive and necessary. Correct. So, with neutrality means we observe the thoughts that are coming in our mind, both from our own minds and the external inputs that are coming to us. If they are necessary or positive, use it. If others are discouraging us or our mind is discouraging us, neglect it. And of course, there's no need to spend time on waste thoughts. So by becoming neutral observers, the detachment to become neutral observers will come by meditation and by developing our spiritual quotient. This is very practical in distancing ourselves from the mind and then controlling it. Next. Yes. Now, last is, if you want to control the mind, we need determination. Why? Because controlling the mind is the greatest conquest. Now, you remember, the mind is like the software. The software gets corrupted, the hardware may be perfectly in order, but the hardware is useless. So now, most people are concerned with external achievements. Let me become famous, powerful, wealthy. And very few people actually worry about controlling their minds. But now let us see contemporary examples of people who achieved phenomenal success externally. But some viruses corrupted their mind. And they ruined themselves. They undid themselves. All the success became a failure because they had not succeeded in controlling their mind. Yes? So this basically shows how when we give a negative input to the mind will also act negatively. Yes? Can you imagine? 8,000 murders and 100,000 acts of violence. That's what we see in TV. Now people think I'll watch TV to relax. But actually, we don't relax by watching TV. We absorb the stress of the characters on the TV. In our minds. That's what happens. So when we give negative inputs, we put the viruses and the virus will corrupt us. So let us see what happened. Yes. So you know, the most powerful person in the most powerful country of the world. And he was overpowered by this virus called lust. What happened? He disgraced himself. He disgraced the nation and almost such a huge amount was spent on the investigation. Well, that's lust. So lust is not just a danger on the spiritual path. It is danger on material success also. It's a virus that corrupts us. Next. Then, you know, greed. Hansi Cronje. Now, South Africa was on the top of the cricketing world. Unrivaled champions. And he was the captain. And then, he got involved in match fixing. And he was banned from international cricket. And he very ashamedly admitted, I feel ashamed to admit to my fans, the unfortunate greed, unfortunate affection that I have nurtured for greed in my heart. But he had enough money, he had fame. What more does a person want? But when these viruses infect us, we can't behave rationally. Behave irrationally. So we have to guard ourselves from these viruses. Yes? And this is Mike Tyson. Yes, he became the youngest boxing champion. And his claim was, I will also be the oldest boxing champion. But in one particular bout, he was losing and he got so angry, he just pounced on his opponent and bit off his ear. Plucked off his ear. And then he was banned from boxing for some time for that. So he has lost so many valuable years of his life. That is just anger going out of control. So now these are viruses which are there, very much prevalent in our society. And the more we free ourselves from these viruses, the more our mind will change its position from enemy to friend. And the less we free ourselves, or the more we contaminate ourselves with these viruses, the more our mind will act as an enemy. Go ahead. Yes, the greatest conquest in the world is the conquest of the mind. Because when you conquer the mind, then all other conquests will help us to achieve happiness. Otherwise, even if we achieve all our conquests, they will be hollow and they will collapse. So like when you want to build a building, build a foundation first. Similarly, conquering the mind, controlling the mind is the foundation. And external success will follow. Therefore, this is the most important activity that we can do in our life. To transform the enemy into the friend. And that is what the Vedic spiritual technology is all about. To harness this mental power and utilize it for individual, social and global good. So I'll quickly summarize. We started first with the story of the snake. Yes. So who killed the person? It's not the snake, not the mice, not the his own mind. And then we started with, we went ahead with the discussion of several aspects. Starting, we talked about William Blake's quote, heaven out of hell, hell out of heaven. We talked about how science has discovered the power of the mind, the negative and the positive. Negative is psychosomatic illness and phobias, and positive is psychoneuroimmunology and placebo effects. And then we also discussed our own identity, the three dimensions, body, mind and soul. And then we discussed about the 4 points for control. What is M?
Meditation.
Meditation means fixing the mind on the unchanging. And God and His name are unchanging. That is the best way to meditate. I is?
Brilliance.
So spiritual quotient gives a direction in life. If you have faith in God, our direction never goes off track. So that is spiritual quotient. N is?
Neutrality.
Yes. Become detached and observe the mind. And choose the positive and the necessary thoughts. And reject the negative and waste thoughts. And D is? Yes. Determination to control the mind. Otherwise, we may have determination to achieve success. But our mind will undo us. And we saw the examples of the viruses that corrupt the mind. So lust corrupted whom? Bill Clinton. Greed?
Anzikronia.
And anger was Mike Tyson. So now all of us have to be aware. All these viruses are in us also. So we all have to be very careful and cleanse ourselves of these viruses. And then we'll achieve lasting success internally and externally. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes, please.
I would like to ask one question which may be on behalf of everybody, which may not have come
yeah.
to their mind. See, most of them are students.
Yeah.
And most of them will be in the material world outside, working in some company or other.
Correct.
Like, for example, changing from one job to another for a better career prospect and an opportunity, does it come in category of greed?
Okay.
I'm undergoing the same phase and I'm in a fix to take a decision whether to change over or not.
So, right.
These three ways I'm trying to correct that part here.
Yes, correct. Now, asking the question that we change the job to get a more paying job, is that greed?
Not exactly paying opportunity.
Better opportunities, whatever, yeah. Yeah, not necessarily. No, we have to be upwardly mobile in our career and we can change jobs. So, if we are spiritually minded, we consider not just the material opportunity, but also the spiritual opportunities. See, our life has three aspects. We have our work, we have our family, and we have our devotion to God. All these three are like a tripod. All three have to go together. Now, if our job sucks so much of our time, that we have no time for our family, no time for rejuvenating ourselves by devotional practices, then such a job is undesirable. So, the greed means we want to do one activity at the expense of other. For example, I want money at the expense of morality, at the expense of integrity. That is greed. But wealth is Lakshmi Devi and wealth is very powerful. And if it is in the right hands, wealth can do so much good to the world. So, wealth, the desire for wealth itself or the desire for better career is not greed. But when it is at the expense of either our relationships or with our family members or our relationship with God, then that is undesired. That means it takes so much time, energy and vitality that we have nothing left to offer to God. Then that is undesirable. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, please.
Stress comes in our mind. How should we manage it?
If some?
Stress comes in our
yes. mind. Yes. It's a practical question. If some stress comes in our mind, how do we deal with it? We have a stress management seminar also for that, but I'll tell briefly. Stress is caused by inability to perceive the cause of a threat. For example, suddenly I hear boom, a sound outside. Really, I'll become anxious. What happened? And then I just go down and see just a stone fell down. Then the stress goes away. But mind may go, maybe the bomb exploded. Maybe somebody shooting bullets. That means when we see some effect and we are unable to perceive its cause, that causes threat. And when we come to know the cause, then the feeling of stress, the threat goes away. For example, now your exams are coming. Now we don't know what kind of paper will come in the exam. But then that causes stress. So now there are certain things in our life which are in our control and certain things which are not in our control. So first of all, by clearly understanding what is in our control and what is not in our control. So for example, like with respect to exam, say you are getting stress. Then what is it in my control? What kind of paper will come? No, but what is in my control? Study. So if I recognize that, then my studying will also influence my result. So if I focus on that which is not in my control, then I'll become more and more stressed. So as soon as the mind goes there to that which is out of control, bring it back to that which is in our control and focus on that. For example, somebody else is behaving in an unreasonable way. Then rather than focusing on his behavior, we'll just either become angry with him or feel sorry for ourselves. But focus on how can I behave better with him? What is it that is in me that is causing him to behave like this? That is in our control. So when we focus on this, then the stress decreases. The stress may not go away, but it will decrease, surely. So, and even if the problem remains, at least we will not unnecessarily dissipate energy. Now worry, it is said that 15 minutes of worrying spends as much energy as 60 minutes of digging. Seen workers digging, sometimes it's a construction worker, you think, oh, they're working so hard. But we may be working harder than them. And at least they are earning some money by that. How much money do we earn by worrying? Nothing. So that is at an immediate level. But the ability to do this, the ability to focus on that which is in our control and to let go of that which is not in our control, that requires faith, faith in God. Okay, there's things that are not in my control, but there is a God who is in control. And He will take care of things. So that faith develops by associating with devotees, by associating with those who have faith and by learning spiritual knowledge from them. Then when that faith is developed, then we can move forward in life. Okay? Any other questions? Yes, please.
How can we differentiate our mind from our intelligence? Means you are saying that we should treat our mind as a different person. But how can we compare?
Yes. His question is, how can we differentiate the mind from the intelligence? Imagine, say, you are having an exam tomorrow. And at that time, one of your friends who has the exam after 1 week, he comes, let us go for a movie. Now something within you will say, yeah, let me enjoy. But there's something else within you which will say, no. You have to study, your exam is there tomorrow. And your parents have spent so much, they have brought you here, they have kept you here, you have to be responsible. All of us, we sometime or other feel these two voices, isn't it? We feel one voice, the lower voice, which is dragging us towards immediate pleasures. And one voice which thinks long term. But the voice which always talks about instant pleasures, that is the mind. And the voice which sees long term is the intelligence. Now, of course, there are some people who are able to see material long term, but they don't see spiritual long term. But by associating with devotees, we get the ability to see both material and spiritual long term. That is the intelligence. Yes, there was a question behind, please. Yes. Yeah, correct. It's a very good question. Now, are we imagining something good by making heaven out of hell or hell out of heaven? No. First of all, I mentioned how if our perception is negative, that secretes negative hormones, negative chemicals, and that weakens us, weakens our ability to deal with the situation. So now there is a difference between spirituality and positive thinking. Positive thinking means, okay, the glass is half empty, see it as half full. But, you know, if the glass is empty only, what positive thinking can you do? No, the glass is full. No, that is not optimism, that is stupidism. I cannot imagine the empty glass to be full. So we are not talking about an imaginary comfort. So, positive spirituality, Krishna consciousness, is not just positive perception of reality, but it is perception of the positive reality. Perception of the positive reality means by spiritual knowledge and by spiritual advancement, we start seeing the positive reality. What is that positive reality? That there is a God in control. And where I see chaos, God sees order. So that requires spiritual advancement. Just like if a child is sitting on the mother's near the mother's feet and he's seeing the mother sewing a cloth. And the needle just goes up, comes down, goes up, comes down. Then from below it appears to him, yes, the needle is going down anywhere, coming up anywhere. But from above, the mother is sewing a pattern, isn't it? So similarly, from our side, things may be appearing just too chaotic. But from God's side, he's sewing a pattern in our life. He's purifying us. He's empowering us to come closer and closer to him. So therefore, what we are talking about is positive perception. Perception of positive reality. And there is a God and he's in control. So if we live in harmony with him, then he will protect us. That requires faith. So that's not just imaginary. So two things I said in the answer. First is, if we have positive perception itself, that will make us better equipped physically and emotionally to deal with the situation. And secondly, we don't stop at positive perception, but we go beyond to see the positive reality. Okay. One last question quickly. Yes, please. Yeah, actually, about the brain, mind and soul is God. So, when we harmonize ourselves with God, then everything becomes optimized. Otherwise, they become three different vectors and going three different directions. That's why we understand the laws of God and live in harmony with them. Practice mantra meditation, the power of God becomes channelized through us. So, all three intelligences become empowered and fully utilized by that. That is the way to harmonize all of them. That's why you will see many of the students who actually take to spiritual practices seriously, they'll also become better academically. That is not the primary purpose to practice spirituality. We want to develop our devotion to God and return back to him. That is the ultimate benefit. But these are fringe benefits and they are also extraordinary. Because our mind comes under control, then our concentration increases. We can study also more effectively. Okay. So, we'll stop here. We have some announcements. Thank you very much for your kind attention and thoughtful questions. And my best wishes to all of you to transform your most dangerous enemy into your greatest friend by the power and the grace of God. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.